very good morning to you. Welcome into today's room. I can categorically tell you I really don't know what is happening today, but I do know in the first hour we're staying with current affairs. Martin Kenny, Sinn Féin spokesperson on transport, joins us. We're also joined by Dr. Yoshi, indeed, Professor of Interventional Cardiology at the University of Galway, and a major breakthrough that's been done there, so we'll be looking at that on today's programme. Also in this hour, also, I do believe we'll have some other interesting guests coming in the way. Some people who have gone up the ladder in the last couple of hours. Also, we're joined by the Mayor of Galway, Anthony Cahirlock, and many others between now and 12 midday as we chat just about life in general and a 62-year-old retiring. That and more between now and 12 midday. Good morning to you. And a very good morning to you. First off, I want to say to everyone that has sent in any of the all of the cards. I was reading cards last night and the goodwill and everything. I just want to say a sincere thank you to each and every one of you. There's too many of you, and I will try and get back to as many people as I can by sending cards back as well. But to everybody indeed who sent in a card, I'm just trying to get somebody up online here. To everyone who sent in cards and letters, and I got a lovely book from a man in Kinvara, and that I'm looking forward to reading. But to all of you who sent in cards and messages and all that, sincere thank you. Means a lot, so it does. Today, we've got a bit of fun on the programme today. And it's the first time in 34 years that I actually don't know where we're going, but I do know at this stage I'm going to go to Martin Kenny, who's the Sinn Féin spokesperson on transport, and he's joining me because he received a parliamentary question response from the Department of Justice that reveals that just four additional Gardaí have been appointed to the road policing unit across the state since 2017. Martin, could that be correct, by the way?
Yes, it certainly could, and it is correct. First of all, I think we're all in dismay at the number of people that are dying on our roads and the huge numbers of traffic collisions that we have. And a lot of this is down to, you know, incorrect enforcement and not having enough Gardaí. And in the parliamentary question reply, you know, it said at the end of January 2024, there were 627 members assigned to the road policing unit, compared to 623 in 2017. So that's an increase of four in 7 years. Now, I'm surprised that the minister even admitted to that failure, never mind the reality of it. It's a very dismal record for the minister to be boasting about.
But is that because of retirements and or otherwise that may have come from that unit as well? And again, they've been replaced indeed by rank and file Gardaí.
Some of that may be the case. However, the roads policing units across the state had over 1,000 Gardaí in them over a decade ago, and they've gone down to 627 as of 2024. So, you know, the reality is that we've had, you know, a huge depletion in the numbers in roads policing, and a lot of that has moved over to where they've privatised the service, if you like, and they're using the GoSafe vans more and more and more. And the GoSafe vans do carry out a role and are important, but they don't detect anything other than speeding. And there are an awful lot of other incidents on our roads that are causing accidents besides speeding.
There are, but I mean, then the Garda Commissioner has issued indeed a statement to all Gardaí that they have to do a 30-minute stint on road safety during each of their shifts. But I mean, it needs to be more clear than that. I mean, how is he going to manage that? How is he going to just monitor even that?
Yeah, that's up to the sergeant, I suppose, that'll be in charge of each unit. But you know, that's welcome. You know, I met the commissioner, you know, a couple of years ago, and I said to him that there needed to be more rank and file Gardaí on the streets, on the roads, monitoring traffic and ensuring that we looked after the situation of the colossal number of deaths that we've had on our roads and the tragedies that so many communities are facing. And we need to see that happen, because when the Gardaí are out on checking traffic, watching traffic on the road, when they're stopping people at checkpoints and they're doing all of that, they're also finding other crime. They're finding people that are possibly suspects in burglaries, they're finding cars that are vehicles that are stolen, they're finding people that may be moving drugs and other things, because all criminals use our roads network. So it's not just the people who are breaking the rules of the road that they detect. So it is good policing to use more and more of the Garda resources for to monitor our roads and to ensure that people are driving safely on the road, because it sees and detects so many other things as well.
It is, and I suppose it's no solace to any of those that have lost loved ones that may be listening to us today.
No, it's not. And, you know, I'm not saying that the detection and guard enforcement is everything. There's a whole range of things that we need to do. We've seen the programme last night on primetime in relation to the RSA and what's happened with the number of deaths on our roads. And the fact is that, you know, we need to see a reform of the entire syllabus that we have for training young people how to drive, because so many of our young people are being lost on our roads, and they're a treasure to all of us, you know, and we need to ensure that we have a system in place that protects them. They need to be trained better in the driving lessons that they do. At the moment, we have 12 driving lessons is compulsory. I think that's the lowest in Europe. In a lot of other countries, it's up to 25 and 30 lessons that are compulsory. Also, in regard to the lessons that people take, it's generally targeted toward passing the test.
Yeah.
You know, when I speak to the people on the ground, the driving instructors, they tell me that that's the focus of the person learning to drive, is to pass the test, and that they need to have a more improved syllabus, and that they need to have more lessons in order to not just be competent drivers, but to be safety conscious competent drivers, so that they're aware of the unexpected things that can happen in a situation when they're driving, to give them more personal responsibility about safety. That's one aspect of it. There's also another aspect of it as well that needs to be looked at, is the whole situation of the safety of the roads themselves. A lot of the accidents that we see occurring are on stretches of roads where there have been multiple collisions, where we have bad series of bends, where we have, you know, dangerous junctions, certainly as people going too fast on them, but it's also, you know, the quality of the road. And local authorities are always looking for more funding to improve those junctions, to make those places safer, and I think we need to see more resources put into that as well.
But can I mean, again, when you look at the figures, you're looking at young males, are the majority of those that have lost their lives or have been driving cars where people lost their lives, it's young males as well. And maybe that's where the focus should be on this one, and maybe put governors on cars and all of that type of stuff just for a period after they get their test.
Yeah, well, you know, that's something that I'd be very much in favour of. You know, we see in some cases, in fact, my own young fella, when he was 18, he started to drive, and the first insurance that he got, I forget the name of the company, or I won't mention the name of the company, but they put a box in the car. It monitored the driving for the first year. Now, the insurance was still expensive, but it meant that he knew that it was going to be expensive again next year if he was driving erratically or speeding or doing handbrake turns or any of that sort of thing. So it made him much more safety conscious when he was driving. And I think that's the kind of thing that we should be doing, bringing in more technology around that. Other jurisdictions have technology around mobile phones as well in cars, you know, because an awful lot of the accidents we see are people that are trying to text on their phone, or, like, I've seen it myself, people driving with their knees while they're texting. You know, it's crazy stuff. But people do it a few times and then they continue doing it. And bad habits form. And we need to have, I think, you know, better education, better enforcement, and better roads for people to drive on. And if we can get those things right, we can turn this around. But that will all require, you know, reform of the system, but also investment, and particularly investment in detection and in the resources we have for regardless you call it.
Absolutely. But I mean, it has to be taken seriously. There's too many, and the RSA are doing their best. But I mean, it is down to people's habits. And there is technology in all of the mobile phones, indeed, that if the car is moving, that you can't use it. But that needs to be,
that's right,
that needs to be engaged with. And it needs, again, is, you know, you're infringing on people's human rights if you do something like that. But it's something that needs to be looked at, because I think that is one of the biggest I see myself, truck drivers, bus drivers, car drivers, the whole kit and caboodle. And you can see they're stuck in traffic and there's a gap in traffic and you're wondering why, because they're texting on their phones.
No, it's a regular problem, you know, and it really needs to be dealt with, because, you know, you can't have your attention on the road if you're traveling and also have your attention on your mobile phone. And, you know, while there's hands-free kits for people to speak while they're driving, you know, that may be fair enough, but certainly for to be texting, to be reading messages, to be doing all that sort of thing, you know, it's just simply crazy for that we would have that happening. And we see it all the time. And that's down to personal responsibility. People have to take responsibility for that, because it does, you know, cause collisions. And, you know, the impact of these things, I think, as well, and I seen a thing recently where, I think it was in County Mayo, where they had people in looking, youngsters, to see the impact of some of these accidents, where, you know, the terrible catastrophic injuries that people have been inflicted, you know, youngsters never able to walk again after a car crash, simply for a couple of seconds of taking their eyes off the road, a couple of seconds of driving erratically or dangerously, and it becomes a habit. And you know, one of the things as well that we need think we need to do also is that when you get your driving license for the first time, you're a learner driver for the first year. I think before you step up to the next stage, there should be a compulsory number of lessons that you have to do again, so that the first year of driving, when you have probably established very good habits, but maybe some bad ones as well, that they can be corrected. And I think, you know, it'll cost money and it'll be difficult and awkward for people, but you know, I think the reality is we have to turn this around, and we have to make sure that we can make the roads safe for people to use, because it's so, so dangerous out there for so many people, and we see it all the time. And the families that have lost loved ones, you know, they can't be replaced. And we simply have to get it right. And I think we can only get that right if we put the effort into it. If we change the criteria that we use for training people how to drive, if we put the proper enforcement in place, if we improve the roads that people drive on, they're the three things I think that can make a difference.
All right, thank you for joining me. But I mean, you should keep an eye on the Mayo County Council, because they are very, very up to date when it comes to those training sessions. And I saw them many years ago here in Galway when they did it in Leisureland. And all of the young students that left were upset and crying because they saw the devastation, because they did it so, so well and so right. But thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. Deputy Martin Kenny of Sinn Féin there. Comment lines are open today on 086 38 33 55 3 if you do want to get in contact with us. And that's 086 38 33 55 3. It's a Friday morning. Good morning to you.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Good morning and welcome into today's programme with you right through until 12 midday today. Dr. Yoshi Onuma joins me. He's the Professor of Interventional Cardiology at the University of Galway, and we're looking at a major report which has been successfully published, but he joins me. Dr. Yoshi, good morning to you. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. What exactly is interventional cardiology?
So the interventional cardiology is the subspecialty within the cardiology. So cardiology is the physicians to take care of the heart, but in base interventional cardiology is we do the treatment based on the catheterization or the so that, for example, we put stent for the patient with heart attack. If there's a blockage of the coronary artery, the a vessel around the heart to provide the blood to the muscle of the heart, we put the stent. We do this kind of the interventional treatment. Other field is catheterization, aortic valve replacement. For example, we put the new valve when you have a disease in the aortic valve. We put the new valve through this groin. That's the kind of the field of the interventional cardiology.
Now, a lot of this is done, but I mean, the work that you do the scanning, you do all of that, it's very intricate work.
Yeah, thank you. So in this, our research, we try to use the cardiac scan instead of this invasive coronary angiography.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so invasive coronary angiography is a standard method for the time being to diagnose and do the treatment plan for the patient with a coronary artery disease. So the usually the patient has to be admitted to the hospital, and the physician will perform the procedure in the cath lab by giving the local anesthesia, puncturing the artery with some small needle, and we advance the wire and catheter through this artery to this heart. And we visualize by injecting the contrast media the blockage or the narrowing of the coronary artery. Mm-hmm. So that's the normal way to do it. But in our research, we try to use the cardiac CT scan, which is a non-invasive imaging, to visualize and diagnose the coronary artery disease.
So is this a major breakthrough then in the treatment of cardiac issues?
Yes. Yeah, so the CT scan is a non-invasive imaging. So patient will come to the hospital. It's outpatient based. You don't need to get a puncture of the groin or the wrist. You have to lay down on the table in the machine called CT scan. And the CT machine is a kind of the sophisticated X-ray machine. The machine will rotate around you many times with high speed, which enables us to visualize precisely the anatomy of the coronary artery and the other organs if you want. Mm. So we use this CT scan and provide this image together with the AI-based blood flow simulation called the FFR-CT to the surgeon, and to see that if the surgeon can operate the patient based on this CT scan. What we found is that in 99% of the cases in low-risk patient, the surgeon could operate the patient only with this, based on this non-invasive cardiac CT scan.
So it makes it, it brings bypasses and cardiac problems to a new level then?
Yes, yeah. So for the patient perspective, I think the sometimes invasive coronary angiography is unpleasant, so you can skip those unpleasant procedure, which is of course well established but still not risk-free. And so the patient perspective, it is less invasive, more pleasant, and also from the hospital point of view, you can skip the some of the cost related to the catheterization. So we think that this will be the potential benefit of this approach. Potentially we can have some cost effectiveness by doing this approach.
So rather than, so your catheterization then, which is going in through the groin or going in through the wrist, that doesn't have to be done. But if work has to be done on it, is that then where the work, is that where if they need some work done to put in a stent, does that still have to go in then through the wrist or the groin?
Yes, yeah. So for the time being, the treatment of this blockage or the stenosis is either putting a stent percutaneously or the surgery. And if the patient has an indication of the coronary artery stenting, then after the CT, the patient can immediately go to the cath lab for the treatment. For the moment, there is one procedure before. First, you have to go to the diagnostic angiography and then treatment. But if you have a CT scan, we can skip the diagnostic procedure. So you can use the time of the cath lab more dedicated for the treatment rather than the diagnostic procedure.
How long have you been working on this?
I think the project started in 2020, so I think almost four and a half years work.
And are you delighted with the outcome? Are you very happy with the outcome?
Yes, this is a first-in-man trial, so we tested this approach in a low-risk patient, but at least the first result is very promising, and our colleague of the surgeon was also excited to see this result. So I think next step will be the, to test this approach in a broader population, broader patients indication. So we are now planning to have a new study with 2,500 patients to really prove the potential benefit of in this approach in a broader population.
And can I ask you then, maybe it's a very stupid question, but what's more, what does more harm to the body, the getting the catheter put in or getting the scan done?
Yes, yeah, of course, usually before going to the diagnostic angiography, we do some tests like exercise test or the, some non-invasive imaging to be sure that there's a suspect of the coronary artery disease. But if you have a CT scan, you can do the CT scan and directly diagnose if there's stenosis or not. So that will be a little bit advanced method of the diagnosis.
Technology, where would we be without it?
Yes.
Thank you so much for popping into us, Dr. Yoshi Onoma. Thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. And further details can be had from the University of Galway website. Just go to their news page and you can get further details from there. Thank you for popping into us this morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.
So very good morning to you. Welcome into the programme. And a lot of tomfoolery going on around here and a lot of people wearing funny suits going on around here. But I'm told that our Taoiseach is on the line. Could that be true? He's in Moore, so I thought. Good morning.
Good morning, Keith.
Taoiseach, it is you. Good morning to you. How are you today?
It is indeed. I'm very well and I'm really honoured that on your final day of broadcasting in Galway Bay FM to be here with you for my first broadcast interview since becoming Taoiseach. So I just wanted to join your show this morning, Keith, to really thank you. I know on behalf of all your listeners, but to thank you on behalf of so many people right across Ireland for your incredible broadcasting career. 34 years of broadcasting with Galway Bay FM, but also beyond Galway Bay FM, to thank you for your incredible advocacy for the county and city that you love so much in Galway, and also for the hospice movement where I first met you, with the incredible work that you've done there. So just to wish you and Joan and all the family and the very, very best.
You're very good. You were in Warsaw last night, and did you get home to in Ireland now?
I'm in Ireland now. I'm in my office in government buildings now, and I'll be welcoming the Spanish Prime Minister here later this afternoon, and also meeting with the Garda Commissioner, Minister for Justice and others, before heading on to Limerick later. So we have a busy day ahead. So we've gone from the European to the domestic. We had was in Brussels yesterday to meet President von der Leyen and the President of the European Parliament, and then on to Warsaw to meet the Polish Prime Minister and five other Prime Ministers. I thought it was important I do that in the early days of becoming Taoiseach, to make sure we build good links across the European Union.
What has it been like for you since you took the role of Taoiseach? What's it been like for you and your family and your children? We saw the Dáil Chamber, we saw the great respect that was shown, well, by some people to you. But what has it been like? Has it been a roller coaster?
Yeah, it's been a little bit surreal. Look, it's a great honour. It's something that I find very humbling. I'm conscious that I'm one of only 16 people in Ireland to have the honour to have been the Taoiseach of this great country. And that means a lot to me, it means a lot to my family. But I'm also very conscious that politics is never about you, the office holder. It's about the difference you can make for people. You know, I first got involved in public life as a moody, opinionated teenager in County Wicklow, fighting for better school facilities for my brother with autism. So to go from there to here, it's been quite a roller coaster, but I intend to give it my all.
And again, the cabinet reshuffle that you did and all of that, does that take a lot out of you? Because there was very little movement that you could do, but you had to do.
Yeah, cabinet reshuffles are always quite challenging because, you know, you know everybody involved. I mean, I've been a member of the Dáil now for 13 years. I've been in the cabinet for 8 years. And these people, many of them are your friends. You know them, you know their families. You know how good they are and how hard they work. And what you're trying to have to do, though, is you're trying to put together the best team you can. Of course, you're conscious of a whole variety of things, geography and gender, but you're also conscious of the need to drive on and get the people's business done. And I had set out a number of areas that I wanted to make real progress in between now and the next election in March. And I wanted to put the best team in place to deliver on those priorities. But yeah, it's always a tense time. And look, I've been through this as a minister. It's always a tense time wondering, will the phone ring and will I get a call from the Taoiseach and be asked to do a job? Yeah. But at the end of the day, outside the bubble we live in, people want to just know, are you going to get on with fixing the issues that they're facing in their own lives?
It's a challenging job, and there will be ups and downs. I mean, the local elections and the European elections are going to be the first challenge from there. I mean, you've got a good crew running in Galway West and Galway East, indeed. The likes of the Mayor, Eddie Hoare, I know you're attending, please God, you're attending his Mayor Ball on the 26th. But you have a good crew there. Will that be the first test then?
Well, if actually it's the first electoral test, absolutely. Now, look, I'm conscious it'll be a short period of time between me having become the Taoiseach of the country and that. So I've signed up for the long haul here, and there's a lot of work to do. I tried to outline when I was at the Ardèche in Galway last weekend. God, it seems mad that was only last weekend, but last weekend I tried to outline some of the areas I wanted to make progress on around small businesses, around farming, around law and order, safer streets, housing. So, you know, I'm going to need a bit of time to do that, but I'm determined to hit the ground running. When I was in Galway last week, I got a chance to canvass with the brilliant Councillor Clodagh Higgins and my colleagues, Minister Hildegard Nocton and Senator Sean Kyne. We were in Salt Hill, also canvassed with Maria Walsh, the MEP there, going in and out of businesses, talking to different people and crucially listening to them as well. Met Andrew Reddington too. Very conscious you have a good team of public representatives in Galway, and I'm eager to support them. And certainly I'm hoping to get to the Mayor's Ball later this month as well.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a photograph in today's City Tribune, Taoiseach, of you pulling a pint in Salt Hill.
Oh, yes.
But not, and even like Prince Charles did take a sip of it, but there was no sip taken by you. You donated it to all the punters. But you did pay for it, I'm told, so that's a positive thing altogether.
Absolutely. No, I pulled the pint, but I can assure you I didn't get an opportunity to drink any of it. But look, it was great. But what I did definitely see in Salt Hill, and I know this is the way right across Galway, is how many brilliant local establishments you have, whether they're whether they're the pubs or the restaurants I was in, the cafes, the shops. There was a real buzz, beautiful part of our country, and hoping to get to go back at a more leisurely pace sometimes too.
And the next big challenge for you before the election then, is it just basically steady the ship and try and bring membership back on board?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, my internal aim in Fine Gael is to inject an energy and a self-belief back into the party, to the members right across the country, to work closely with our candidates. But as the Taoiseach of the country, my job is to get things done. So today I'll meet the Garda Commissioner and the Minister for Justice. We'll have an opportunity to discuss a whole range of issues in terms of how we try and make streets safe, how we grow Garda numbers, how we help retain our Gardaí, how we bring forward laws to tackle things like antisocial behaviour. Next week, I'll meet the Road Safety Authority. I feel very strongly on this, Keith. I mean, we made a lot of progress in relation to road safety, but unfortunately, the last few years, things are not going in the right direction. Of course, that involves people changing their behaviours, but also I as Taoiseach, have responsibilities there in terms of resourcing the Gardaí, listening to the Road Safety Authority and what they have to do too. So a number of meetings. I'll chair my first meeting of the Housing Committee in Government on Monday. Want to see what we can do to, like, we're seeing good progress in relation to housing numbers, but we need to see much better and much larger numbers. I think the waiver of development levies has worked very well, and want to see if we can get that extended, because that makes it cheaper to build, quite frankly, and therefore cheaper to buy. Conscious of the farmers, been a rotten year for farmers with the weather. We've brought forward some supports, but there'll be a need to do more there too. So, look, busy, busy agenda, not just in the weeks ahead, but in the days ahead, but very much looking forward to it. But listen, you're asking me a lot about what I intend to do. I wanted to be here today to genuinely, it's the reason I rang in, to reflect on your contribution. I know you to be a humble individual who'll seek to downplay it. I can't do that on a day like today. So on behalf of a grateful nation, I really want to thank you for your incredible service, for all that you've done in Galway Bay, but also for all that you've done for your community, your county, and particularly for the hospice movement.
Taoiseach, thank you so much. I let you off, and I'm blown away by your comments, but I like them, but they don't sit well with me. But look, I have to get through the next 2.5 hours of something.
Sorry. Well, I won't make you emotional, but listen, thank you for everything you've done, and I might see you at the Galway, at the ball, but do keep in touch, and I'll continue to keep in touch with Galway Bay FM as well.
Absolutely. I'm seeing the ball, and we were talking about you last night, the Mayor's Ball indeed, on the 26th. So the Mayor has a real nice package put together indeed to make sure that you're okay. Thank you so much for joining us today, Taoiseach, and enjoy the rest of your day. And I look forward to meeting you in person in the near future. Taoiseach indeed, Simon Harris. Your boss was just on the phone, Oliver.
How did John Morley call him? My supreme leader.
Your supreme leader is on the phone, so he is. Morning to you.
How are you, Keith?
I'm good now. I'm very good, actually, yeah.
God, they're coming in thick and fast, in fairness. Now I met Don Deasy going out there. He was in great form. A lot of goodies left for you at reception as well.
I'm afraid to look outside.
So it's one of those days. I know we're going to have our own little chat about sport a little bit later on the show after 11. So we'll keep this to this weekend, and in particular, I suppose, the Connacht match over in Italy. So they go back to Benetton. This is a real Groundhog Day job. Were they not there 2 weeks ago? Yes, they were in the URC. And remember, they were beaten by that last second try. So they will have plenty of motivation to try and right the wrongs of that day. And they have a good chance of qualifying for a semi-final. Obviously, you know, from this point of the tournament, it's very much knockout. It's for Connacht, probably their best bet of silverware. They're struggling a little bit in the URC after losing in Benetton, and with 5 games to go, they're going to have to win 4 of them at least, and 2 of them are away to Munster and Leinster. So their back's against the wall in the United Rugby Championship. But the Challenge Cup, I suppose, it presents a wonderful opportunity for them now to go and do something really special.
Is the mindset good, do you reckon, for this game?
It would have to be after last week. I mean, the way they won in Poe, 40 points to 30. It wasn't perfect.
So does that carry them forward?
It should do. Yeah, I mean, there has to be momentum there in terms of the victory, because remember, they'd lost the 2 before that.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of reverse psychology now, you know, from really struggling and having to find a performance last week or the season would be gone. They did, and now they have to build on that and use that positive energy in a good way in Italy against Treviso side. That would be no pushover, that's for sure, but you know, you have to say that it'll be another tight game. I think the bookies have it as a point of a differential between the two teams, so there's very little doubt that it's going to come down to one score. And it's probably going to come down again to the last play of the game. Mm-hmm. And Connacht have lost three times this year in the last play of the game with the clock in the red. And like, who'll forget Leinster in the sports ground? That disastrous night when we had everything done bar winning the game. So let's hope that maybe something might work in reverse for Connacht. Mm. That's on Sunday at 12:30, so it's an early start. We'll be starting our sport at 12:20 on Sunday before we go to Croke Park for the very National Camogie League final. Galway and Tipperary, a new pairing, not from a Galway perspective because they're going for three in a row, but for Tip, who have kind of fallen off the pedestal in recent years, and it's very much been Galway, Cork and Kilkenny for the last decade, hasn't it? And, you know, the likes of Tip and Wexford, who would have had their halcyon days in the noughties, they're, you know, struggling to get back, and Tip are getting there bit by bit. So it Camogie definitely needs Tip to be strong. It needs Wexford to come back into it again. It probably needs, you know, the likes of Clare to come and be strong as well. And Waterford, we saw last year, getting to the final. It needs more teams to be competitive. And I think that's the key. But Galway will fancy their chances in what should be a really interesting game in Croke Park on Sunday. It's tied in with Meath and Dublin in the football as well. So first time we're going to see Camogie and Gaelic football on the same bill in Croke Park. So that's interesting, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Wow.
And not before time, says
no,
you.
No.
Do you know? So I'll be tonight. We've got the Galway Minor Footballers. They're playing in Tuam Stadium at 6:30. We'll have live coverage of that one on the website until we start our sports show at 7:00, and we'll have the second half live before we hit for Waterford for Galway United. So busy night for Galway United. So that catch-up game with Sligo is going to be Monday week. So that'll be what effectively is the ninth game of the first round. So this is the start of the second round of matches. And it's a team they've beaten already. It's a team they know well from all of last season. So Galway will hope to go and get a result. Remember last year they got the 2-2 draw down in Waterford late in the season, which effectively sealed the title. Francilie Lomboto getting a late goal. So we'll see what happens in Waterford tonight. But that's one of a number of games in the Premier Division. What happened last night with Liverpool? I mean, I did not see that coming. So they're playing a crowd called Atalanta from Italy. I always have to make sure I pronounce it Atalanta, not to be confused.
It is a mouthful,
with the American city
Atlanta
of about 5,000 miles away.
Yeah.
So Atalanta in Italy won 3-0 at Anfield, which is utterly bizarre because I'd have nearly chalked that up as I think everybody had. The big joke doing the rounds were the amount of B&Bs and tickets for the Europa League final, which by the way is in Dublin. That's the whole point of it. So Liverpool and West Ham fans who were looking a couple of rounds beyond where they are at the moment were kind of thinking, let's book Dublin that weekend now. Liverpool-West Ham final, it'll be class. Won't be class now. You'll be going to see Atalanta against Bayer Leverkusen going by last night's results because the Germans beat West Ham 2-0. So a really disastrous night for the two English teams in the Europa League. In the Conference League, a bit better for Aston Villa. They beat Lille 2-1 in the first leg, but they've got to go to France. That match is delicately poised going into the second leg next week. Moving away from that, we got to go to golf, Keith, and the US Masters.
Yeah.
So what of Rory McIlroy and his chances? Well, he's not out of it. He's 1 under par in what was a really difficult first round with the weather. But two players shone out. One of them, no big surprise, the world number one Scotty Scheffler, who at 6 under par would have assumed, if he was told beforehand, Scotty, you're going to go around 6 under, that he would be comfortably in the lead. But he's bettered by one, by Bryson DeChambeau, one of the 13 players from LIV Golf who was playing in the US Masters. Now, DeChambeau, of course, was this just unbelievable hitter of the ball a couple of years ago, you know, won the US Open, was driving the ball nigh on 400 yards, making a mockery of some of the toughest courses in the world. And then went off the boil. Went to LIV, didn't do much there, but then again, we didn't get to see much of him, but he wasn't exactly winning. But he's back with a bang. And yeah. I mean, I don't know whether he can sustain this. Mm. What might count against him, and you said this to me before, the fact that they only play 54 holes in LIV, which, by the way, for table quiz enthusiasts, that's what LIV means. It's the Roman numerals, L-I-V, 54.
Is that what it stands for? So
that's what they want to do. They want to play 54 holes. They want a shorter format. They want to play team golf. They want everybody to go out together in a shotgun start so that everybody will start on a different
hole. They just want to change the whole
concept. They want to change the whole concept. They've got bands playing music in the middle of it. You can stop and have a coffee and a hot dog if you want before you take your second shot on the third.
Are you writing another play here for me by any chance?
I'm just saying, that's live golf. That's their world. And then you come back into the traditional world of 72-hole stroke play in a major. I'm just wondering, will it catch up with DeChambeau? It could catch up with him today, Keith. I think it'll catch up with him before Sunday.
Mm.
Now, John Rahm has gone over to live golf and already he's saying, look at what might be a big way of pulling everybody together in the world of golf is if Liv decide, look at, let's forget this nonsense of 54 holes and start playing 72 hole tournaments like we've been doing all our lives. And that might, you know, soften the blow a little bit of them having to kind of do some sort of a deal with the PGA Tour, which we were told was happening from last summer. But anyway, that's the golf. DeChambeau 7 under, Scheffler 6 under, Rory McIlroy 1 under, and Shane Lowry is level par with 2 holes to play. He's one of 27 players that has to go back out this morning in America to finish their first round because the wind and rain was shocking. But it's cleared up. It's a beautiful day there now. So,
and do you think, will you go up the rankings?
Well, obviously, with the US Masters, it's one of the big tournaments of the year. Mm. Big money as well. So and Lowry's done well here. Like, he's finished third a couple of years ago in the Masters. So any big performance in this tournament, because it's a limited field and it's the best of the best, it would carry a lot more weighting. So there's no doubt if, first and foremost, Lowry and McIlroy want to make sure they're around for the weekend, so they can't afford a blow up today in round two by shooting something like 76 or 7, or they could find themselves on a flight home, albeit only to Florida. But
in a private jet.
McIlroy 1 under, Lowry level, not too far off the mark, but you're really worried already when you see Scheffler at 6 under that the world number one is going to take some stopping. Albeit, he'll have to keep an eye on DeChambeau to see what he does today as well. Snooker, Ken Doherty is looking to roll back the years and try and qualify for another World Snooker Championship. He's up against Marco Fu.
How long can he keep going, Ken Doherty?
Well, as long as he's able, as long as he's
fair play to
getting invited, and as long as he has the ability. Of course, he's doing all right anyway with his commentary career on the BBC, and what else is he selling? Some sort of van insurance on the radio. Aren't we playing those ads, aren't we? Ken Doherty here. Yeah, so if you're looking to insure your van, talk to Ken, or else have a look at him playing in the World Snooker Championship qualifiers. So he's out this morning against Marco Fu. And Aaron Hill, the young lad from Cork, he's a guy we'll keep an eye on now for the next year or two, because he's had an odd kind of fleeting moment of genius. Like, he was only a young lad starting out in his first year as a pro when he beat Ronnie O'Sullivan in a tournament. So he has great prospects. He's up against Daniel Womersley, and both of those are best of 19. So I'd love to see Aaron Hill get to the World Championship proper and see could he ruffle a few feathers there. But again, it's the usual protagonists, I reckon, when it does come to the crucible. You know, it's going to be the usual, like Ronnie will be at the top of most people's lists. Judd Trump, Mark Williams in good form as well after the Tour Championship win last week. He's not gone away either. And I'm sure there's plenty more besides as well. But keep an eye on Doherty and Hill today in the snooker. In racing, it's day two of the Grand National Festival at Aintree. I think Seamus went round yesterday. You know the way we do the sweepstakes every year?
Yeah.
And every year Bernadette wins?
Yeah.
That's on tomorrow, the Grand National. So I presume you got it horse. It'd be a right sickener if the weekend you're leaving, you don't get a horse for the Grand National sweep. But that's on tomorrow.
I think he's in on runner this morning, the same horse that I got.
Well, of course, there's a lot less running than previously. So I think we're down to 32 horses for the Grand National instead of the usual 40. So that's less to go around.
I like looking at it, but I don't like looking at it because, I mean, there's so many fallers, so many people get hurt. It's a tough Grand National.
It is. It's a tough race. It's not as tough as it used to be, of course, Keith. You know, the fences are a bit more benign. The distance is...
And rightly so.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But they're always looking at ways to try and improve the safety. Of course, last year there was protests. Remember, it was a highly disrupted race.
That's why I believe security is at an all-time high right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
They glued themselves to the fences. Yeah.
So, and look at... I've great time for animal welfare as well, and it has to be taken on board. But I'm always balancing that as well with the huge spectacle and interest and, you know... Anybody who's been around horses, you know, they really love, you know, when you see them prick their ears, that's a horse that really loves what it's doing. And, you know,
and they're happy in the skin.
I think that the sad thing is, as you say, when you hear of a horse fatality, and unfortunately in that sport,
and a jockey injury,
that's what you don't want to see.
We've had enough of them gone, sir.
Yeah. Here at home, Dundalk at 4:30 on the all weather is underway as well. But as I say, it'll be all eyes on the Melling Chase. That's the big race of the day, the Grade One cross channel at Aintree. So we'll have a preview of that coming up at lunchtime on our racing as well. So
is George McDonagh on fire now for Aintree?
Well, he'll be only on fire if he pulls the winner of the National tomorrow, and that's many ways.
No pressure, George.
Stick a pin in it. But I think it's a bit like Cheltenham, Keith. Like, I think 2/3 of the horses running tomorrow are Irish trained.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on in England, or whether Ireland has taken over the world in terms of horse racing.
Well, it seems to be.
But, you know, one time there was a novelty about an Irish horse winning the Aintree Grand National, and then you'd be celebrating it, and you know, the cameras would be there in the in whatever town or village in Ireland that the winning horse would come back to the owners. But now it's almost expected. And I mean, Willie Mullen's domination, while applauded, you'd have to say, is it good for horse racing? Because it's utterly dominant what's going on at the moment. Gordon Elliott not too far behind, but that's why it's lovely when you see a small yard or somebody out of the ordinary, you know, getting a 100-1 shot over the line, a Mon-Mom moment in the Aintree Grand National. Will we see that tomorrow? Probably not, but as I say, that's the beauty of horse racing and the Aintree Grand National in particular. Every now and again, just a complete outsider will do the business. But I hope the weather clears up. That's the big thing, Keith, because it's been just shocking. And now here we are hitting into the middle of April, and it's no better than the conversations we were having back in January and February about the awful weather going to matches. So we'll talk more a little bit later on the programme.
All right, Oliver, thank you, Dee, for joining us today. And your fearless leader is on the phone looking for you again. So just away you go and talk to him. Keith, would you ask the doctor about the risk of having an angiogram? I'm having one, but I hear the risks are high, so nervous. Maria, thank you and best wishes going forward. We'll miss your voice. Maria, go for it. I've had it done. There's nothing to it. They knock you out and it's done from there. Just go and have it and don't worry about it. Don't worry about a thing. Now, yet to come on the programme, I don't know what's happening, but we'll find out just after the news. Stay tuned for that and more to come. And this is my final day, and the hundreds of texts that are coming in and calls that are coming in, thank you. I'll sit down and read them all tonight, I promise you.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, located on the Monavay Road.